Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this December the 20th on the West Coast. Now, the magical, mystical, metaphysical date of December the 21st, 2010, on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome all of you, ladies and gentlemen, listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. I'm sure you're going to find tonight's show to be fascinating, at the least. A lot of truth is going to come out tonight, so please pay attention. Before I go into any heavy news or any speculation on what might be underway considering the date, and I will discuss the date for a brief moment here, numerologically, in terms of the favorite dates that the Illuminati like to acknowledge and play around with, we have this repeating pattern of 1 and 2, 2 and 1, 1 and 2, or 2 and 1, however you want to look at it, in the date, the 12th month, December. 1 and 2 is a 3. We have the 21st in most of the time zone. Soon, even the West Coast, in a couple hours, will be caught up with the rest of us. 2 and 1 in the 21 is also a 3. And in the year 2010, or 2010, the 2 and the 1 add up to a 3. And we have a 3, 3, and a 3, or 333. You could say 3 times 33. It adds up to a 9. 9 turned upside down is a 6. And this being the first day of the winter solstice, if you will, this is a day that they've been talking about. Of course, they've been talking about this date in 2012, which again is a series of ones and twos, twos and ones and twos, and they like doing very strange things on those days. Strange to us, but to them, the usual. And so we must be on guard and ever vigilant to the possibility that we could be experiencing one or more false flag events. We'll go into that after we listen to a message from Phil Perry and his musical mentor on guitar, Lee Ritenour. If I'm dreaming, don't wake me.
Ah! eyes. I see where all the love lies. Take me to the other side and hold it all.
From his album Earth Run, Lee Ritenour, sung by Philip Bailey, and actually also Phil Perry was the lead singer. Philip Bailey and Maurice White from Earth, Wind, and Fire joined in on that song. That came out many years ago, and it's kind of interesting because it has a double meaning. You could take it as a love song, or you could take it as a song of spiritual consciousness, and it's a way of bringing us a bit outside the box. That's why I chose that song tonight. I have been contacted by General Jeremiah from the United Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon, and Project Alliance, and everyone around the world is feeling that this date is significant, and that the powers that be, as they like to call themselves, the elite, the Illuminati, are planning some sort of a false flag event in the United States. And this is all over the world. This is being talked about everywhere but in the United States. And in the early part of January 2009, I had received information and was picking up my own impressions that something was underway. And I had actually discerned a list of cities that were planned to be struck with nuclear weapons in the United States. And I prayed about it for 24 hours and decided I'm going to tell the people. And I'm going to do the same thing every time information like that comes to me, whether it comes from a higher source or it comes from people in the know around the world. Not everyone is stupid, you know. Not everyone is ignorant of what's going on, despite what the mainstream media will or will not tell us and how they spin the lies to try to make them sound true. We will just keep bringing the truth forward. Now, I gave out a list of seven cities back in 2009, and as I recall them, we were looking at New York, Washington, D.C., Miami, Atlanta, Denver, Kansas City. There were some secondary places. Minneapolis was one of them. Houston was another. San Francisco, and of course, always Los Angeles is in the mix. What can we do about it? We can pay attention, because if we know that they're planning something and something does happen, we know who's behind it. Just like on 9/11 and many of the other events that occurred prior to that or in a couple of years after that, few years even, London, the London bombings was one particular incident that was worked out numerologically on a calendar to the equivalent of 777. Those things don't happen by accident. The Madrid bombings, the Bali nightclub bombings, all of these events, these false flag events, bear the numerological signature of who the president of the United States was at that particular time. And I've talked about that on past shows. We're not going to waste that time tonight, but we're going to bring on tonight's guest and we're going to talk about this very topic. And should we have the time, some other ones regarding more corruption that's being uncovered and the connections and who it points to. Very, very clearly, it points to this, and it ties some other events such as plane crashes and those things that are portrayed to you as accidents that occur because ice forms on airplane wings or someone clips some trees a few feet short of a runway. It's happened over and over again throughout the years, and it's traceable to who is actually responsible for these events. Tonight's guest is a regular guest here on Evident Footprints. You already know him if you've been listening to the show. He is a naturopath, a PhD. He's an author, lecturer, teacher, and he hosts his own talk show on the microeffect.com. From Monday through Wednesday, the show was called The Story Behind the Story, and my good friend is with us this evening, Dr. A. Girott. Welcome to the show, Drew.
Well, yes, good evening, Don, and Merry Christmas to you. I don't think we'll be on the show again until after the Christmas, and there's some very strange rumblings going on from a number of individuals, not the least of which is Jeremiah. I've had this awakening at 4 o'clock in the morning. The last, I think it was, I did it on Thursday morning and again Saturday. At 4 o'clock in the morning, I woke up feeling ill because I just was showed that there was thousands of people dead in a nuclear explosion in America's cities. The L.A. area, I saw Chicago. There was something to do with the St. Louis Arch, whether that was Kansas City side or whether it was right there in St. Louis, Missouri side, I'm not sure. But New York, I didn't see it happening there. Unless, like they saved it from happening in L.A., but everything was just shut down completely.
Mm-hmm. Now, we didn't talk about this before the show, did we?
No, not at all.
So these things happen, and, you know, I've been getting this impression for quite some time. I've actually talked to quite a few people who are sensing or have been sensing that something's afoot, we'll say, something's underway. And this is the talk around the world. World leaders know about this.
Well, I had the same type of thing happen. I'm not sure of the exact year that it happened when they had the tsunami. Was that 2003?
2004.
2004. Yeah, I had the dream in a few days before it happened in December, and I told some friends, close friends, about it. And I saw, the hundreds of thousands of dead lined up in the catastrophic event that happened. But what I was shown was the actual planning of this was in the Pentagon. An office with Wolfowitz, a conference room was all the order was to create the tsunami. They know how to do that with these. They can move the plates. There was an explosion that they created and caused the tsunami. I saw it all,
mm-hmm.
and to the point where I actually explained that it was happening, and sure enough, it did exactly like I was shown. I have had other experiences where. These things have been planned, and there's been intervention, and it's stopped.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the possibility, and with the Federation, especially in the nuclear arena, it could be forestalled, and that's what we're hoping for.
Yes. Now, you mentioned a couple of events that actually touch upon my research, especially the Bali nightclub bombing and the tsunami that occurred. That tsunami occurred the day after a baby was murdered in a ritual sacrifice, and this baby had the usurper's name. It was a female baby that had lived for 56 days, a numerological 11. The baby was born on Halloween and died on Christmas Day of the same year, 2004. The next, and the significance of that was the alleged date of the alleged maternal grandfather's, I should say great grandfather's birthday, was December 25th. And so you have, that was the 110th anniversary. That's a number 11. So there were two 11s, and then they were advertising that the number of dead the next day, on the 26th of December 2004, was 146,000. 1 and 4 is 5, plus 6 is 11. So we had three 11s there, and then there was an address in Florida, in the Tamarack of condominiums. The number was 111. 11 and 11. Now, that could be added up to be a 3, but they were looking at 11 on each side of a 1. Okay. So you the number 111, just 11. Okay. So we had 11 plus 11 plus 11 plus 11 is 44. And what number is the current president right now? Is he not the 44th? Just interesting how that numerology sort of works out. This is very interesting. And the tsunami hit what country? Indonesia. The Bali nightclub bombing works out, by the way, numerologically to a 44 as well. And I wrote about that, and I also have spoken about that on my radio show many times. So I thought it was worth mentioning that we can study what they do. We can study the numerology of a particular date and know that it means a lot to them to pull something off on that date. Now, in the first event, the second night of broadcasts, even though we did 8 broadcasts on this topic of false flag nuclear events in the United States, the information came out that it was pulled back on the second night. So we just basically reinforced our position the following 6 nights. But just wanted to mention that. Now, it's interesting that you are saying this because I've been getting the same impressions, and I've been talking to others who have been feeling this as well. What do you think, or from where do we see these things? How do you think we're all receiving these messages?
Well, I think in discussion I had last week with Jeremiah on the phone. The events of of the galaxy, the galactic time space through these portals. And again, we just had this discussion in church Sunday with the pastor who talked about Luke chapter 1. You know, Zacharias comes in after he has the curse or whatever of dumbness brought off. He begins to speak at the birth of John the Baptist, right? And he explains all of the coming event of Christ as in the past tense. It's like he's in a time warp. And Pastor Jim was great. He said, in God's time with and interfacing with humankind, there is no time. The report to Zacharias was, it's done. It's happened. And yet in the time space of earth time, it hadn't yet occurred. And I think that's where it comes from. I think when you know, somehow, when a cataclysmic event that affects tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people, I think there's a mass quantum awakening that it needs to be focused on and perhaps reversed if possible. I mean, it's all part of a learning curve for me, Don.
Well, I agree. There's no doubt that this comes from the heavens, okay, that it comes from God himself. And any of his agents, be they prophets or his son, the Lord Jesus Christ, or anyone who is assigned a role to be a messenger in delivering that. We can feel it in so many different ways. And certainly if the talk is going on, even behind closed doors, if the plans are being made and ramped up, we feel that energy. We feel it because things are changing here on this planet. They always have been, and they're going to keep changing. And the pendulum is now on the upswing, on the positive side. It's moving upward, and so people are waking up, and it's not by coincidence that so many people are seeing and feeling the same things. We're realizing what has happened to us over thousands and thousands of years, and this is the generation that's waking up to this. Would you say that that's pretty much what's going on?
Yeah, I think so to a certain extent. I don't know if it's unique to certain individuals or just being able to tap into the mass consciousness factors, but I'll tell you one thing that hit me strong on Thursday is, again, like you said, the numerology. 2012 being the target date of the Georgia Guidestones, and so many of these Illuminati individuals talking about the Mayan calendar ending, the stupendously stupid movie 2012, all for fear mongering. But the agenda with the elitists are, you know, the dates and times. Well, today, 1220, like you said, is just a mirror image of 2012. So it's like an archetype of what's going on. And what I've been doing today is recording a DVD presentation on this coming cataclysmic event that you can take it to the bank, ladies and gentlemen. It's coming. America will, in fact, see hyperinflation. When the official announcement is made that the U.S. dollar is off of as the world's reserve currency, I'm here to tell you the dollar is just, you might as well blow it around in the streets because it will have no purchasing power in the banking scheme. Again, it's all to bring in the Bancor, the international currency, and to strengthen the Chinese dragon, the yuan. So I see all this happening. My sources that I trust strongly figure 6 to 9 months from the first of the year. Well, I meditated about that over the weekend, and what hit me very strongly was the month of September 9 of 11. 2011 is when it, is what date in September? Maybe it's 11/11/11. Again, there's some mystical numerology to these people with September 11th, even to the point of that's what you dial to have an emergency, 911. That didn't happen by accident, ladies and gentlemen. There is some spell binding going on here by the dark side.
Yes, I agree. If I could, I would like to share a message I got yesterday, and I presume that I got this so that I could share it with you and the listening audience. I'll tell you who it's from after I'm done reading it. How's that? Mm-hmm. Dear family, friends, and fellow Americans, in watching Mary, Mother of Jesus, on TBN, I reflected on how America, a nation founded on Christian principles, has morphed into one of the most ungodly nations in history. America was founded as a godly nation. America's motto, "In God We Trust." Our national hymn is "God of Our Fathers." We pledge an allegiance to one nation under God. Moses symbolically presides over Congress from his location across from the Speaker of the House. The Ten Commandments are displayed above the chair of the U.S. Supreme Court's Chief Justice, and the 97th Congress declared the Bible to be the Word of God in Public Law 97-280. Today, it's clear America is morally, philosophically, institutionally, and financially broke. Was this by accident? No. Even a superficial look at today's America will show a silent counter-revolution has transformed America into a nation-state of global government operating in accordance with the godless Communist Manifesto. On February 1, 1992, President George Herbert Walker Bush announced America's demise by saying, "It is the sacred principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter to which we will henceforth pledge our allegiance." Could it be America's condition is the result of America being under judgment? And if it is, what has America done to deserve God's wrath? Let us look at just a few possible reasons. We are told in Galatians 5:1 to stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. Have we complied? No. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, 1 through 13, God told us of the blessings we could expect if we hearkened diligently unto the voice of the Lord thy God and gave us some instructions. Have we complied with them? No. In Deuteronomy, again, 28, 15 through 44, we find the price we would pay by failing to hearken unto the voice of the Lord, and that we'd be cursed in many ways. Can it be argued we aren't? No. Deuteronomy 28, 43 through 44 reads, "The stranger that is within thee shall get up above thee very high. He shall lend to thee, and thou shalt not lend to him. He shall be the head, and thou shalt be the tail." Is this why we owe over $60 trillion in public and private debt and face another $55 trillion plus dollars in unfunded obligations with only about $7.3 trillion in our money supply, leaving us no way to pay our debts under current monetary policy? Is this why the stranger cannot be stopped from taking title to all real wealth, homes, farms, etc., of his choice, holding a mortgage on the remainder, and a claim on all future production, meaning bondage for this and future generations? The answer is yes. Perhaps most importantly, the first commandment says, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," Exodus 23. Do we? Another unequivocal yes. In the interest of mammon, over 99.7% of our so-called churches are incorporated businesses created by the state. Since a created cannot be greater than its creator, it's self-evident the state is the god of these churches. Could America's breakdown be the result of America being a nation of sinners and hypocrites? I suggest it's not only possible, but factual. I further suggest our problem, when distilled to its lowest common denominator, is that America has overlooked the importance of James 4:17, saying, "To him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin." People are creatures of habit, so while we know change is needed, we continue doing the same thing over and over while praying for a different result. By definition, this is insanity. Though a more knowledgeable biblical scholar could provide many more reasons as to why America has come under judgment, I accept that we are and pray you do, for the question then becomes, what can and should we as individuals do in an effort to return America to its moral mooring so it can again enjoy God's blessings? Step one is to accept the truth of the 30 Republican governors who said, federal action has exceeded the clear bounds of its jurisdiction under the Constitution and thus violated rights guaranteed to the people. Step two is individual repentance. We must truly regret our sins, earnestly seek deliverance, discard the strange God so prominent within our culture, and choose to honor and serve the living God. Step three is to acknowledge that faith without works is dead, James 2:20, and make a commitment to practice our faith through action. The first act being to demand any churches, businesses, we support, unincorporate, and preach the full gospel if they hope to continue to receive our support. Step four is to accept the federal action alluded to by the Republican governors would be impossible if those in government believed in God. They don't. This was made clear on 11-12-2003 by Alabama Attorney General Pryor when questioning Alabama's former Chief Justice Roy Moore before the Court of the Judiciary. Attorney General Pryor asked Justice Moore, "And your understanding is that the federal court ordered that you could not acknowledge God. Isn't that right?" Judge Moore said, "Yes." Attorney General Pryor continued, "And if you resume your duties as Chief Justice after this proceeding, you will continue to acknowledge God as you have testified that you would today?" Judge Moore replied, "That's right." Attorney General Pryor continued, "No matter what any other official says?" Judge Moore replied, "Absolutely." On the basis of his testimony, the Alabama Court of the Judiciary removed Chief Justice Moore from office and had the Ten Commandments monument removed from the Alabama Supreme Court building. And while God may continue to live in the hearts and minds of some of us, we are being denied the right to openly practice our faith and to live under the biblical principles reflected in our Constitution, principles that are the foundation of liberty. Step five is to recognize the bad news and act on the good news. Our nation's founders left us the tools with which to peacefully put a stop to this criminal federal action and take America back to its lawful, biblically inspired foundation. Our need is to use them. The effective use of these tools demands unity of spirit and action by millions of people. None are in a better position to foster unity than pastors and veterans. They are geographically dispersed, have the numbers, needed facilities, and most importantly, the obligation. We can improve the probability of realizing our goal if we follow Midori Saveri's advice saying, "Until we abandon our manifold private agendas and unite, we will merely be hapless observers standing at the bottom of a dark, deep, pit, wistfully hoping to save the world, but really doing little more than breaking the fall of compatriots who were pushed in on top of us. Only by uniting in a common effort devoid of subjective paradigms will we be able to mold the human spirit upon which we may ascend to freedom." The 30 governors pledged to restore to the states and people the prerogatives and freedoms guaranteed them by the Constitution. Let's do it by creating the undeniable Take America Back team described at the cnc.org. Together, we can take America back. Our posterity has a birthright to the liberty only God can provide. It's our duty to secure it for them, in God and country, with a merry and spirit-filled Christmas to all. General Jeremiah from the United Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon, and the commander of Project Alliance. What do you think of that message, True?
Well, I received the same message, actually. So, yeah, no reason to disbelieve it.
It points to the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's one solution. There are those that are anticipating a lot of chaos and all the bad things that go along with that. But that does not have to happen if people would turn to God. And we've talked about that on so many other shows. Now, I know that you've come into some information in that regard recently as to some of the strange things that we're dealing with behind the scenes. You mentioned Russ Dizdar when we spoke privately long before tonight's show, and some of the things that he's recognizing. Do you care to expound on that topic at all?
Well, in a nutshell, yeah, Dizdar is a minister doing work related to what's best described as MK Ultra victims. In his book, he discusses them as being what's called the chosen ones. And in a nutshell, he shows the evidence that there is a literal army of human cyborgs that are human in every way except for their mind is literally compartmentalized and like Charles Bronson's character in Telephone, you know, explains that it just takes an event for, you know, master controller to set these off, and these chosen ones are designed to create just a ton of havoc. Not only across America, but across much of the free world, the Western world. This is going to be a massive concerted attack, and you can't bring in the new order, ladies and gentlemen. You can't bring in their new economic system, their new world currency, without totally dismantling the dominant currency that has been in existence in the world since World War II, and of course that's the U.S. dollar. Now, the first phase of this dismantling of the country and the dollar came in 1965 when Lyndon Lying Baines Johnson took us off the Silver Coinage Act of 1792. Now, that happened with virtually no media bias or question. I mean, I went over that on tonight's show in depth, Don, and it's just amazing when you really sit down and read the Coinage Act of 1792, you get a sense how critically important that bill was to the founding fathers, especially to Thomas Jefferson, and you read the Jeffersonian papers and what he actually had put down as being the most important segments of the Constitution. And in his private writings, he likened the sound monetary system, the sound basis of valuation, as being the rock upon which the republic form of government is built. And if you don't do a sound, honest money, money system, and you do in speculation, it's very much like building a house on quicksand. You're going to be destroyed eventually. 173 years pass. There's again the gematria of 12 from 1792 to 1965. And you have this ceremony in the Rose Garden of the White House where Lyndon Johnson basically lies to the world about the reasons for debauching and debasing the coinage. You know, when you look at it ostensibly, Don, simply moving minting a pure silver dollar as an exchange, it all looks very innocent at first, and it's all easily rationalized away. The official reason that Johnson gave for changing the Coinage Act was silver's a rare mineral, and we don't want to be dependent upon silver for our expansion of our currency. But that is such an absolute false flag lie. The very reason why silver works, the very reason for its basis of the Coinage Act in the first place, is precisely because it is rare. It wouldn't be precious in a base valuation if it wasn't rare. Okay, so that's just absolutely Hegelian double talk by Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out then and explains that also that he's declaring the reason for the debasing, putting in the base metals now in the coins, because silver is scarce. And then in the next minute, he's explaining that nobody can drive the value of these coins off by holding them and not circulating them now, because he says, quote, silver, the treasury has all the silver that they need to keep it from happening. And they're going to strike billions more coins before they quit making the silver coins. Wow. It's not just a matter of cranking out reserve notes in your own private printing press. You can't really do that until you debase the very standard in which the dollar is based on. That's the silver content of the silver dollar.
Mm-hmm.
When you look back and look at this thing from retrospect, you realize just how brilliant the plan was, all following a specific times table. From Bretton Woods in 1944, there in New Hampshire, here's all of these Western countries that are all in war in Europe, in the Pacific. They're meeting together as if the war's all over and they know how it's all ended.
Yes. And, you know, I have to bring this up because we do get some new listeners, and sometimes those who've been listening for a while aren't paying attention this late at night.
But yeah.
My research, which is in two serial articles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhowers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Birth Certificates, mm-hmm. shows that that Eisenhower himself was an infiltrator. He wasn't an American. And there's resounding evidence to show that that myth is still being perpetrated today. And they're making mistakes in the process, glaring mistakes that reveal the fraudulent nature of his being an American, which is untrue, and everything else that goes along with it. Johnson himself is implicated, according to documents that I posted as links to those documents within the articles, that show from 1942 through 1972, he was involved in, extortion, maybe even blackmail, but certainly there was embezzlement going on, and they were using the military funding to do that, to set up a spy network in this country, infiltrating Texas, in particular Denison and Sherman, Texas, with foreign spies. And so what you're describing is just the culmination of 30 years of practice in doing other things that lead up to that. So it underscores what you just said.
Yeah, right. It's again, there's just an amazing link also to our friends at Goldman Sachs. I took a page out of your book, Don, and started digging into Henry Fowler, who was the Treasury of Secretary under Johnson, and lo and behold, we find he's been groomed by Goldman Sachs to that position, and when he finishes his dirty work, his dirty deed, he gets rewarded with not just a tenured position, becomes a full partner of Goldman Sachs and heads up the New York office. Job well done, Mr. Fowler, and that's the reality of history. This man is absolutely criminal, and I said on my show, I'd like to repeat it here, that the U.S. Coinage Act is very, very, very clear. In 1792, do you have any idea how much the President of the United States was paid as a salary?
Well, I have to say, honestly, no, I don't know how much that was, but it's probably going to be something around $1,000 or...
Yeah. Around a grand, $800 to $1,000.
Okay.
1792, the importance of the Treasury is such that the salaries were enumerated here in this act. The Secretary of the Treasury, let me get the exact wordage here, there should be allowed and paid as compensation for the respective services to the said director a yearly salary of $2,000. So more than the president, to the said assayer, a yearly salary of $1,500, to the said chief coiner, a yearly salary of $1,500, to the said engraver, salary of $1,200, to the treasury, $1,200, the treasurer, to each clerk and as employed, a salary not exceeding $500. On the weight scale of 1792, these were top dogs. But then you've got to realize that they had to also each post a personal surety bond of $10,000, conditional for their faithful and diligent performance, quote, of the duties of their office. So you see all of this being put in so very, very importantly, and then you go to section 19 and you read what the penalties are for messing around with the system. Section 19 says, quote, and it be further enacted that if any of the gold or silver coins which shall be struck or coined at the said mint shall be debased, which is what happens in 1965, or made worse as to the proportion of fine gold or fine silver therein, or shall be of less weight or value than the same ought to be, pursuant to the directions of this act, yada, yada, yada. It says, any of the coins which shall be struck or coined at the said mint, every such officer or person who shall commit any or either of these said offenses shall be deemed guilty of felony and shall suffer death. I mean, how clear can you be how important this is?
Mm-hmm.
In the acts that were put in pursuant to the Constitution being ratified, this Coinage Act of 1792 being a peripheral of the Constitution, you have only one other thing I could find in my research that said the same language, deemed guilty of felony and shall suffer death. The only other thing was high treason, okay, a conviction of high treason in the military. You're shot. You're dead. So this would be similar to, you know, the debasing of the currency would be an act of high treason. Why? Because, again, it undermines and can destroy this country. And that's exactly what happened in LBJ. He systematically came in, passed the 1965 Coinage Act, and in his remarks at the Rose Garden, he admitted that, you know, this was an illegal act. He said, I can't, our Secretary Fowler won't strike any coins until this bill is signed. In other words, until the act was signed by an act of Congress that, you know, if he tried to do it, he could literally be arrested and hung.
Mm-hmm. Now, would this be extortion or blackmail or maybe even both?
No. Well, again, the Supreme Court ruled prior to that in a hearing that Congress under the Constitution has the right to coin money. So Congress can basically change the Coinage Act of 1792. But if they did so, they had to be doing so under extreme bribery or stupidity, maybe both. I don't know. They obviously don't have a history, an understanding of the importance of the coinage based on the writings of Jefferson and others. It was very clear as you read Jefferson's writings that this Coinage Act must remain intact or the country will just not survive. And it's maybe a generation, maybe 40, 50 years.
Now,
it's right in Jefferson's writing. If you take out the underpinnings of this foundation, you might have 50 years. Look at what the timing. It's been 45 years since LBJ signed that legislation. Right on. Jefferson was absolutely correct.
Yes. Now, in light of the fact that secretly our country was bankrupt in 1933, how does this stand up to that?
Well, again, why was it bankrupt in 1933? It was, again, so much private debt, but not the public debt per se, okay? The private debt was so intense that, of course, you couldn't keep the Federal Reserve notes flowing. And that's all, again, designed to bankrupt the public first. The corporation of the United States was indeed bankrupt, and the receivers were the central bankers. But see, that's a problem because even in 1933, the borrowing was out of control. The Federal Reserve wanted people on a borrowing spree, and they pulled the rug out. But there was not any debasing of the currency at that time. There was just a lot of funny money coming out, reserve notes that were based to the dollar. There's just too many of those reserve notes being out, and there was inflationary cycles. You know, historically speaking, as I go through it, the actual cost of a silver ounce in 1792 was $1.29. Ditto in 1965. The intrinsic purchasing power of the silver dollar was intact for 173 years, Don. So
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and yeah, there's inflationary price increases based on, okay, if you've got a low amount of silver in a country, okay, and you have a limited finite amount of coins, there's going to be a hamburger might cost more than it would normally, but the intrinsic value is always going to be the same of the coin base. And this is what in the writings of Jefferson, he explains this. And you see that happening. So Johnson coming out in telling the nation there in 1965, the reason why he had Congress pass this act and why he's going to sign it is because there's not enough silver to keep the needs of the country going. Hello, that's exactly why you should keep it intact. If silver is scarce, that's okay. It's not going to matter in the long run. You just increase the price of a hamburger. It's not really true inflation. It's just supply and demand and market at work. It's not inflationary.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely different.
Now, we have sort of a dichotomy in that because the dollar can go up or down in value. And in a sense, that affects the price of the silver. The silver stays at a fixed price. It has a tangible value, just as gold does. But when you assign it to a fluctuating currency, that can be manipulated up and down because they're behind the scenes. People have developed means of profiting from those schemes today they're called derivatives and hedge funds.
Well, I gave the example in my presentation today. Let's just let's do a microcosmic view of an honest society. Okay.
Okay.
Let's just say you're in a colony, and you know the absolute amount. You're keeping track of exactly how much silver is in the communal strongbox. You say there's 2,000 pieces of silver. Well, to keep it safe, it's under lock and key, so you issue 2,000 notes payable. And you know that's exactly tied one for one to the amount of silver in the box. Now, if you own a valuable commodity like a gold watch and people want to buy that, let's say that you want to sell that watch for $200, 200 coins of silver, or you'll take money. So you strike a deal with a friend that he'll give you 200 of those of his notes, and he'll transfer the watch. Okay. Now, if the system has remained honest, that value of barter, the trade of the note payable to the watch, is going to be honest and arm's length. It's obvious. But what if somebody that is a manipulator comes to you and says, look, we're going to put out another 2,000 notes payable, but because it's other people have different amounts, you won't really know this. Well, I'm going to tell him if I'm corrupt and crooked, well, I'm going to say wait and do that after the deal is consummated, right? Or what I'm saying is you can actually get in the sell of commodities if you know when extra money is put in that it's above a standard. You'll know when to buy, sell, and when to manipulate the market to the point where you can double, triple, quadruple your profit center. And that's really what's happened with Goldman Sachs and the manipulation of this after Bretton Woods.
Would you say that's insider trading? Is that
on the highest level? Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And so you see this happening in the manipulation of the gold standard in foreign marketing of the U.S. dollar. The Bretton Woods agreement that it would always be pegged, that the U.S. dollar would always be pegged with value of available gold. And people, you know, economists say, well, that's the gold standards worldwide is not realistic. Why? There's only 5 billion ounces of gold known to have been produced. Oh, really? Think about it. That's okay, because the scarcity of gold doesn't matter if it's set at the standard. Your availability of other products like grain or pork bellies or orange juice, that's what's going to be variable, but the standard of gold will always remain the same, but expand only with the new production of gold.
It has an intrinsic value.
It always will remain static, in other words, but only when you start manipulating currency that's tied to that. I go back and explain the example of what happened in 1690.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the colonists of Boston, they had these, the militia were coming back from an unsuccessful raid in Quebec. They were promised 7,000 pounds sterling in silver coin. But they came back and the colonial leaders didn't have the coinage. And they had a problem. They didn't want to tell the soldiers, sorry, you've got 6 months of your life ruined.
Mm-hmm.
So they went in and printed up these notes with the solemn promise that's all that would ever be printed. It was a marker against future tax revenues for the next 2 years, and they guaranteed there would be, you know, face value in silver or gold. Well, what happened, the colonial leaders saw how quickly this was accepted by the soldiers, and then these notes were transfer to tavern owners or farmers or other, you know, people in the marketplace because, oh, yeah, well, this is good as gold or good as silver. Oh, yeah, that's okay. We'll take it. And so when the leaders found how successful it was, they realized their ability to wield this power. They made 40,000 more notes up, just like my example of you know putting something out without value, and suddenly it devalued the first 7,000 notes massively, 65-70%. It devalued it.
It's uncollateralized debt, in essence.
That's a really classic example of how this whole thing started in 1690,
mm-hmm.
and for 60 years up until 1750, in the historical record, $25 million in face value of notes started circulating from Maine to the Carolinas. And yet there was only some estimates show 2 million actual sterling coins, you know, in circulation. Think about it. That's a 10 times leverage. And it got so bad in the trade routes, the French, the Indians were the ones, you know, suckered into taking these notes. And then they were short on getting, you know, the actual coinage back. And then King George II in 1750 issues his decree that it's now a very serious offense anybody in government to issue any of these notes now unless it's 100% backed by gold. So, and then it basically discharged all the notes at that point, which was largely held by the French and Indians. Think about it. You think that would be an act of subterfuge and a war could be fought over, you know, millions of notes out for trade goods.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what's precipitated the French and Indian War.
In my research on Eisenhower, I came to the knowledge through a document which was really a diary of events that were occurring with this UN Lend-Lease program that began on January 1st of 1942. And it was a money laundering operation that gave the Soviet Union the weapons and cash and nuclear blueprints and all kinds of plans for building a reactor and nuclear facilities, and also plates for manufacturing counterfeit bills. So even though we hear these stories from time to time that some foreign criminals have these counterfeit bills, those were put out intentionally.
Well, again, it goes back into the criminals of Goldman Sachs. I'm confident that that's who Kennedy was referring to in his speech to Columbia University when he identified a monolithic organized conspiracy, okay, ruthless conspiracy. I think it was these gangsters, these mafia mobsters that were involved in this banking cartel.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And so he issues his executive order 11110 immediately in 1763 when he finds out that they're eliminating the value of the silver dollar in their Federal Reserve notes, and so he authorizes the Treasury to start cranking out Treasury bills redeemable in silver coin again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's just really telling that after the assassination and after the swearing-in ceremony there on Air Force One, the first act, I understand it was just hours after he was sworn in, LBJ issued another executive order nullifying the 11110. And, of course, immediately work began on the Coinage Act of 1965. Absolutely treasonous, if you understand really the implications of it worldwide. Mm-hmm. So you have all of these notes now since 1965, as you said, Bolshevik communist structures like the funders of Mao, which were again tied to the house of Rothschild and Goldman Sachs is implicated. You have all of these dollars now being traded by Goldman Sachs as note payables in the reserve currency structure, and you literally have by the report I saw, $120 trillion exchanged in these currency holdings of nations like China, Russia, and others. Well, think about it. You do $120 trillion in U.S. debt that's held there because their Federal Reserve notes are debt instruments. Yet, according to the Bretton Woods Agreement, these reserve currencies are 100% tied to the spot price in USD of gold. Well, do the math. $120 trillion divided by 5 billion ounces. Okay, you're talking $24,000 an ounce. See?
Do you accept the check?
Yeah, it's just, and so you see what's happening is the G20 countries now are realizing they're actually saying we need a new Bretton Woods too, but the dollar is not going to be the reserve currency. We can't because it's so powerfully saturated with debt. Now it's not worth anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were to be on the gold standard with the Basel agreements, Basel II and Basel III specifically. And the feeding frenzy on illicit dollars, and this is even before the bailouts occurred, were going on during both terms of the Bush administration. And during the Clinton administration as well, this massive theft of trillions of dollars was going on. And that money became a sort of a political and a banking or a bankster ping pong ball moving from one institution to another. All kinds of illicit trades being tracked around the world. This is still going on. Some of that's tied to the prosperity and freedom accounts that were invested into some 30 years or so ago, actually more than that now.
Yeah, well, it goes back to, again, I keep referencing Jefferson's papers. Mm-hmm. He said there's always going to be speculation. There's always going to be excessive taxation. And the end result is slavery of the masses. And he said, it's best described as a Ponzi scheme. When you start debasing and debauching the currency, putting out more notes and brokering these in an arbitrage structure between countries, as Goldman Sachs has done for 35 years, Don, there comes a point in time where they have to say, oh, oops, the gig is up. I need to go and get another mark. I need to start another currency and do the same thing. And so this is what's happening now in China. The yuan is becoming very strengthened. You've got the multinational companies issuing yuan bonds, raising, you know, putting themselves in capitalization for this, knowing that the dollar is going to be taken off as a standard, and it just goes from mark to mark, Ponzi scheme to Ponzi scheme. But the point is, and Jefferson knew this, there's a point in time where you just can't keep moving the Ponzi scheme. It's all because it's all based on the same thing. Whether it's a Bancor international currency by the IMF or the yuan, it's just going to still keep being traded by these Ponzi schemists, you know, in false amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, the balloon is going to pop, and the whole world is going to be in trouble.
I think it's also, and I agree with you, I think it's also important to point out that This isn't just happening with currencies per se, but it's happening on illicit contractual agreements based upon a fictitious claim that a bank or some finance company or some brokerage house has possession of property titles and deeds, and that these are hypothecated, and people are actually being evicted from their properties. They're being foreclosed upon, and they have no idea that they actually have legal recourse, because these are, again, Ponzi schemes played on unsuspecting people who really are ignorant as to what's going on. 60 Minutes did a story on this yesterday, but they nowhere near came close to the cause of it. They described the problem, that it exists, and that it's going to be a disaster. But nobody, other than on this show and shows like yours and A Marine's Disquisition, Drew Rain Show, Bob Chapman talks about this every week on many shows. This is basically a parallel scheme that has its corresponding counterpart in the financial sector in terms of notes and gold and silver, tangible assets. Whether they be fiat or usury is beyond that, because when they create these phony contracts or these phony titles or deeds, basically they are creating more Federal Reserve notes out of thin air.
Right.
And they're stealing property. Now, I can tell you that I have made some really amazing discoveries in this regard. And it's even in my area. And again, the name Goldman Sachs comes up again. They're operating programs across the country, which they're calling the Western Reserve Land Conservancy. And they're going in and taking public property and pretending like they're protecting the wildlife or the waterways. And, you know, look at what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico and the effect it's having on waterways with the toxins that they're pouring billions of gallons into. And then they're trying to produce schemes, other ways to make money from this. You see, to just pollute the hell out of the planet and turn around and say, all right, well, we have a problem. Your reaction is you want us to do something about it. Here's the solution. And they're going to put carbon credits on everything. And this is all they're doing. Everybody's just watching it. Some are paying attention and understand full well what's going on.
And the carbon credits are leveraged out by the same note payable brokers, Goldman Sachs.
Yes.
It's another Ponzi scheme. I'm telling you, this is absolute – it's worse than piracy. It's the worst outright fraud on the American people and the people of the world that's ever been perpetrated. Again, we got to listen to Jefferson and get back and never forget the importance of that coinage act.
Yeah.
And get back on it on a state level, if nothing else.
I'm glad you mentioned piracy, because I wanted to mention something that's going on in the Gulf of Aden. Okay, this is the area between Yemen and Somalia. And it's come to many people's attention that there is an underwater base in that region and that there is currently a flotilla of ships circling that area. That a dimensional portal was opened. Some think the good guys opened it. And it's the reason this piracy is going on in that area is to scare people, to keep them away so that they can't see what's happening. Pretty interesting. There's a dimensional portal that goes up to the planet Venus.
Yeah.
I know that's a first. But the portal has already been disclosed as far back as January of this year by one of the MK Ultra operatives. But that is a true story.
Right.
Now, that individual doesn't have all the facts, as I understand, and from listening to him, he has many of them, but he's been given a certain storyline, a byline, and may have even been asked to go out and spill his guts a little bit maybe even try to scare people. But there are some very, very strange things going on in space and around our atmosphere and on our planet and underneath the surface. And this is a massive, huge base. I'm told it's probably one of the largest in the world. So it's interesting that we've been seeing all this military activity going on there. And these aren't just American ships. They're Chinese ships and German, British, probably Spanish, French. There's a multinational contingency there that's blocking off this area, keeping people from going near it. Any comment? I don't know if you'd heard of that, but
it's an interesting topic. I don't know how to prove or disprove, other than just eyewitness testimony and things. Until, like anything else, I need to kind of witness it myself before I can definitively state, you know, it's right or wrong. But it's an interesting concept, no doubt about it.
Well, you can go to Google Earth and see the entrances to the base underwater.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I could save you the time, probably send you a photo.
All right. Please do. Okay. Well, golly, I think we're past our time there, Don. And
yeah, I appreciate, all the insight into what's happening here. We're going to be revealing more of the information I talked about tonight, and certainly stay keep posted and keep us posted as to what you're discovering. But this all fits hand in glove with what I've been looking at and what I know some others are studying. This is
the sad thing is the vast majority of the people were way asleep in 1965. I think a lot of people were shocked. And shocked into stupor by the assassination, and again the escalation of Vietnam. The media was concentrating on what McNamara and LBJ was doing in Vietnam, and this Coinage Act has kind of slipped under the radar. That's my opinion. I don't see how this was able to be done. If anybody that has even a half brain about economics would still know this was absolutely a fraudulent act. Sad act. One of the darkest days in America when that was signed. Anyway, I'll leave it alone.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, and I want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas. We'll see you next week.
I am not a ho ho ho.
You're not?
No.
Well,
I'm going to hee, hee, hee. Merry Christmas.
All right. Thank you. You have a great and a safe holiday, and we'll see you after Christmas on this show next Monday.
Will do, and let's hope we get through the holidays with no problems. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure being on the show. Good night.
Good night, Drew. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's guest, Dr. A. Truott. You can visit his website at dratruott.com. There are links also to some other places where his papers are posted, actually, even on my website, directlightproductions.com. I've got some of his writings there, various sections. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints. And over at BBS Radio, let's see, well, we had Seth Hendrick and Doug Newsom on the sound tonight. I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Tomorrow night, my guest is Mr. Clint Richardson, and we're going to be talking about some of these financial things and the comprehensive annual financial reports. So you're going to want to tune in for that show. It's very important information. And Clint's been also working on another documentary, so we'll see where he is on that and follow up on any breaking news, should we have it. Also, I'd like to thank you, the listening audience, for tuning in, and I want to wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.